So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game! It's all about the game, and how you play it. All about control, and if you can take it. All about your debt, and if you can play it. It's all about pain, and who's gonna make it. I am the game, you don't wanna play me. I am control, no way you can shake me. I am heavy debt, no way you can pay me. I am the pain, and I know you can't take me. Look over your shoulder, ready to run, like a Cleveland bitch from a smoking gun. I am the game, and I make the rules. So move on out, you can die like a fool. Try to figure out what my mood's gonna be. Come on over, circle, why don't you ask me? Don't you forget there's a price you can pay. Cause I am the game and I want to play.
Gentlemen, welcome to the game once again right here in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm Coach Ed Springsteen, right here on the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. Welcome to this lovely Tuesday. I'll tell you what, it just seems like everything always happens at the beginning of the week, and looks like today is going to be no exception to that. We've got some good stories going on out there right now. Today, Louisville physician. Yes, you got that right. We've got a doctor who might know a thing or two about healthcare, right? Has decided to run as a Republican for the District 3 congressional seat currently held by Democrat incumbent John Yarmuth. Republican Michael McFarland made an announcement. McFarland is a urological surgeon, 60 years old. He's lived in Louisville for over 2 decades. And I tell you what, he was voted the top surgeon in Louisville Magazine back in 2007. He's in private practice now. And, this guy might know a thing or two about, medical and how to handle things. Totally against Obamacare. He thinks Obamacare is bad, which we all agree with. So Dr. McFarland jumped into the race. We will get him on air as soon as we can and try to sit down with an interview with him. We're working on that as well with Rand Paul right now, actually. So we will get there and let you know how it works. How are you, Mr. Martin?
Wore out, Mr. Springsteen. Earning a living. It's like work sometimes.
Now, you're a business owner. You don't know what work is. Ask any liberal.
That's right. Okay. I am living in the lap of luxury, driving around in eight-year-old cars and year-and-a-half-old Red Wing boots.
There you go, man. That's it. That's exactly it. I've been out to your place. I know what kind of work you do, but nobody would ever believe me, so I'm not going to tell everybody the truth. I'll just tell them you're lazy. That's all. They'll believe that.
Yeah, well, sometimes I invite people out there. Of course, it's no fun to invite them out this time of year because, you've been out there when it's hot.
Yes.
Our warehouse is nice. It can be dusty, and it's not air-conditioned, so I enjoy it when people come out sometimes, and they're maybe overdressed for the occasion, and you bring them out in the warehouse, and they're looking at you like, huh, okay, I get it.
That's exactly
why
it.
You, going up with sleeve shirts with no sleeve and cut off jeans. It's like, because damn, it's hot in this warehouse.
I'm totally with you, man. I'm totally with you. I tell you, it is an incredible thing, man, what's going on these days. Small businesses like yourself are really, really suffering. And, you know, and nobody wants to believe it. So now we finally have somebody who brings credibility to the table to run against Representative John Yarmuth for his congressional seat, the third congressional seat. And I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of glad to see Dr. McFarland get in the race. You know, like I just mentioned, in 2007, he was voted the top surgeon in Louisville Magazine. He's a urological surgeon by trade. The guy writes medical books, peer-reviewed scientific articles. I mean, this guy sounds like the real deal. So is Yarmuth in any trouble?
I think so. I think he, you know, and not just to pick on Yarmuth, but as I was saying the other night, congressional approval is at 5%. So basically, if you're an incumbent, if you're not getting a primary challenge, you should be. And you can pretty much bet that everybody's going to get a general challenge. So, I mean, starting off statistically right. with the low approval rating, yeah, that spells trouble. The fact that Yarmuth, like Barack Obama, has pinned so much on the Affordable Health Care Act, you know, and it's kind of starting off like a Yugo with the plug wires out of order. So it's you know, that's,
well, good
that's not good. He could get up and running, but, you know, I was making a joke today on Facebook. And, you know, it was
right.
it was a good joke. I'll give myself credit. But, you know, I also said these just this rugged startup of ACA has basically written the first half dozen commercials for anybody challenging a Democrat. It's, even
right.
if they do get it straightened out, nobody's going to forget this jagged start. Additionally, yeah, the guy's he's well respected. He's a little, you know, and I have to say it, but he's a very stately looking individual. So he doesn't, you know, he doesn't look like a kid out of his element, as some candidates may have in the past. And most importantly, and somewhat unfortunately, the fact is the rumor is that Dr. McFarland, being as successful as he is, can afford to drop some serious coin on this race.
Well, I'm hoping he can afford it, but it's going to take some serious coin to take out John Yarmuth. And if he's smart, he'll drop some of that coin here putting his ads out. But, you know, we look at this, though. Our good friend Philip Bailey over at WFPL wrote an article today about this. You know, you guys can go there at WFPL.org and look at it. Philip is a real good guy, a lot of respect for. But he points some obvious things out. You know, obviously McFarland and Yarmuth are going to have an entirely different philosophy when it comes to, you know, bigger government, things like that, Obamacare, et cetera. But what's really interesting is, according to Bailey's article, in 2012, it showed that the health care law's popularity in Louisville was over 55%. So here you've got a doctor who is going to be directly, you know, affected by whatever the Obamacare tenets are. And you've got a congressman who makes all his money with Medicare and Medicaid through his nursing home businesses that favors Obamacare, and a 55% approval rating in Louisville. Do you think that popularity is going to hold over the next year, especially with the slow start and really the meltdown of the Obamacare Internet Exchange?
Yeah. In so many cases, it depends on who you poll. I mean, it depends on the question. If you were to go back and get those questions, I mean, are you in favor of, you know, they could have asked elements. So that's very up in the air. I mean, you could have said questions like, are you in favor of dependent children being able to stay on their parents' insurance till age 26? Sure. You know, but, you know, it depends on the question. So that poll is old. You know, and a lot of people thought it was just going to be implemented. A lot of union, because we've still got some fairly strong unions in this town, were buying into the line of crap that you'd be able to keep your plan. You know, and now we're seeing that some of the unions aren't real happy with what might be coming down the pike, you know, after their one-year exemption runs out. So,
well, you know,
I mean, it could be up in the air. This startup is not helping, I can tell you that. But, you know, I think when you look at Yarmuth, he's gone up a couple of the opponents he's gone up against. You know, I won't offer too much comment on them because I'm a Republican now. But even the most, shall we say, lackluster of candidates could still pull a certain 35-40% in an election. So I think
it's going to be interesting.
You throw a guy up there who's probably going to be his professional and his intellectual superior. I think he's got a problem.
Well, it's going to be interesting because, you know, I mean, he's going to base everything on the traditional conservative crap, you know, gun rights, traditional marriage, flat tax, all the divisive stuff, okay? I do like the fact that he's after saying the EPA is running wild under the Obama administration, and he is saying the charter schools are a needed education option. I like those, but admittedly, I haven't done the research on McFarland yet. We'll get to that in the very near future. I mean, it's not a real rush right now. What I'm kind of curious about is to see how this rollout, how he rolls his campaign out, to see if he's going to be a serious challenger to John Yarmuth, or, you know, if he's going to bumble it like Alison Lunigan Grimes did when she decided to roll out against Mitch McConnell. I'm curious to see what he does. This is his first foray into politics. So, you know, anytime you get a new candidate, I'm curious to see how it goes.
For what it's worth, you know, I was having some fun with a Democrat friend of mine today. I did say, I said, boy, he hit the ground running. I mean, he announced and represented well what he announced on the Leland Conway show. But immediately, I got emails. He probably did, too, on a few GOP-type, news sites. So, I mean, immediately after the show, it was uplinked, and it was emailed to a whole bunch of people, and... And you can click the links, and this website of his was ready to roll. I mean, it hasn't been fleshed out with a tremendous amount of detail, you know, not a lot of links because he hasn't done a lot of interviews or anything. But that thing, as soon as he said, I'm in, boom, that thing was up. It didn't founder like Alison Morgan Grimes. And the dig I couldn't resist was, as I told this particular Democrat friend of mine, I said, wow, I said, this dude hit the ground running. Website's up literally minutes after he announced it's a good-looking website.
So what you're saying is
maybe he could have his people help the ACA people.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what you're saying is really the Republicans know how to do websites. The Democrats don't. So if there's a big distinctive difference between the parties, apparently, it's how well you can operate your website. I find that funny.
I mean,
there is a couple
of things. Maybe Dr. McFarland can have, you know, make the funny comment and says, hey, I'll have my people call your people, okay? You need a hand?
I hear you. I'm kind of curious. Do you think there's going to be a third option? I mean, are we going to have a Republican party a Republican primary, or is McFarland going to be Republican game? And if he is, is there going to be a Libertarian step up, or is this just going to be a two-man race, in your opinion, between Yarmuth and McFarland? I know it's still a little bit early, but, you know, primaries are in May, so we've got to prepare for that.
And I have heard a few names batted around, but to date, I don't think any of them, you know, granted, it's a strategic move, too. If he comes out and he represents well and obviously has, you know, hit the ground running in a very professional fashion, that's got to be intimidating to somebody who may not have the funds, may not have the organization. So it's like, you know, I'll be honest, sometimes I think about running races. If I were looking at McFarland and looking at that race, I would go, wow. And it'd be like, you know, I can spend my money somewhere else.
Oh, exactly. And so, I tell you, I find it very interesting because
it's intimidating. I think his message is moderate and good and well spoken. And I think his finances, I think he's letting it be known that if you want to challenge him, if somebody wants to challenge him for the Republican primary, bring your A game and your checkbook.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting, too, because a couple of the things that were in the article by Philip Bailey, you know, McFarland is quoted as saying that Yarmuth has been in there 8 years at the end of this term. That's how long we've been presidents, and he thinks that that's reasonable enough time to give congressmen, which I obviously agree with. We've constantly talked about we need term limits and things like that. Quit making these elected positions lifetime, you know, officials, because they shouldn't be. But what's really interesting here is, he was specifically asked if term limits should include all Kentucky representatives, including a Congressman Hal Rogers or a Senator Mitch McConnell. And McFarland said, absolutely, all representatives in the country. So he included Mitch McConnell, that group, in the term limit debate. And I thought that was pretty interesting, pretty telling right out of the gate.
That's pretty ballsy. You know, you and I, we like to hear, you know, most people like to hear that.
Right.
It's good to hear, you know what, I'm starting to like the guy more. I haven't seen that quote. I haven't read Phillips' article. But, I mean, it's all too often you'll see people talk, you know, they'll, when they're looking at the other party, they'll say, well, he's been there too long. And then somebody says, well, what about
right.
Mitch? Well, he's quite the effective leader, you know, whatever.
Right.
I like that he's coming right out there, and when he says he believes in term limits, he believes in term limits. Boom. And you know
what?
That's
going to be interesting.
You've got an elder statesman from your state, doesn't matter. He still believes in term limits. You know,
it's definitely going to be interesting to see how it goes.
He's not polluting his ideology
right.
and his beliefs with his politics. I already like the guy.
Well, I don't know enough about him to say whether I like him or not. I don't think anybody could be any worse than John Garner. Yeah, well, I like that about him, too, as long as it's not talking, he's actually, you know, serious about it. But I personally think anybody's better than Yarmuth. So I'm kind of curious to see how this third congressional district shapes up over the next month or two before Christmas. Any serious challenger is going to have their name in a hat before Christmas with a May primary. So I'm curious to see what happens with that. We're going to take a quick break, first break tonight. We get back. David Cam, yes, his case is going to conclude. We'll talk about that for a minute and start getting to some other issues. You're listening to the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Turn on the tube.
I tell you, poor Corby, it's time to get over this daggone socialist crap going on in this country. I tell you what, it is amazing. But, you know, every now and then there's other news out there besides Obamacare and this socialist-in-chief we call President Obama. You know, one of the most interesting stories on a local level, it's hit national quite a few times, is the David Kam murder. David Kam has just finished his third murder trial. The jury got the case late this afternoon, the third time. He has been found guilty twice and put in jail twice, you know, for the murders of his wife and two children 13 years ago. For some reason, they keep putting this guy in new trials. This is the third one, so we don't know how it's going to work out, but I'll be honest with you. I think he's actually going to get off on this trial. I think this trial, three's a charm, they say, so I think this jury is probably going to let him off this time. And, you know, whether he did it or didn't, I don't know. We'll find out. But I think it's pretty interesting. You got three trials. Ed, how about you?
Well, you know, the first trial, I was admittedly was a little disinterested. The second trial, but they got it thrown out, you know, because the prosecution apparently took some liberties it shouldn't have, or, you know, evidentiary or something like that. The second trial, I remember distinctly, you know, by then it was like beginning to be something you'd fixate on around here, where the prosecutor was suggested and offered as a thing, one of the reasons David Kam was his family because he was molesting his daughter. And there was no evidence to that. And they actually let that crap in court. And I mean, I remember thinking to myself, wait a minute. You just can't pull crap out of thin air, you know, salacious, vicious, you know, dysfunctional crap out of thin air,
right.
You know, with no really, you know, if you're going to do that, convict him of that first and then go in with a conviction. You can't pull hearsay. So I would, not being a lawyer, although having done it a few times, I pretty much figured, damn, you know, if you can't back that claim up, that aggravating factor up, I remember thinking, this conviction is going to get thrown out. I mean,
it's interesting.
Get better and better. I mean, they've already nailed one person for it. They know Charles Bonnet had something to do with it, probably killed him, career criminal, all this, that, and the other. You know, I kind of have a hard time seeing them convicting Kam. I mean, it's thin. If they do, it's going to be by a thin margin, as evidenced by the fact that the last two times they convicted him, they didn't have any trouble getting it turned over. So, I mean, you know, that is such a sad story all the way around. If he did, it's horrible. You know, three people died.
Well, what really makes it?
And an innocent wife. If he didn't do it, can you imagine what he's gone through at this point, especially with stuff, you know, with a prosecutor saying like, well, you know, we think he molested his daughter and that's why he wanted to kill everybody.
Well, I mean, you know, that was hearsay.
Having 13 years of your life taken away if you didn't do it, that's what I'm starting to think about now. It's like, you know, what if he finally gets exonerated? He's been, you know, bankrupt in the family, that's bankrupt in the county. And to lose 13 years of your life and your family.
Well,
like
there's
that,
a lot more to it.
You know.
But there's a lot more to it than that, though. I mean, it wasn't just that. Let's go to the phones real quick. I believe this might be our good friend Paul with Stop It. How are you, sir?
Hi, gentlemen. Hi. Hi. Hey, listen, Martin's hit on a point that just absolutely drives me crazy when it comes to our legal system. And that is the fact that Kam is in his third trial primarily due to prosecutor malfeasance, okay? And the prosecutor in both the first two trials, they simply failed to do their job properly. But yet, they're overseeing this third trial. It may not be held in Floyd County, but Floyd County's paying for it. This Keith Henderson guy, the prosecutor, he's kind of overseeing it. He's being the coach behind the scenes. So he's got his hand in there. So my question is, what is it about this trial that is most important to Keith Henderson? The only answer I can come up with is that he wants to save his sorry face.
Henderson wrote a book right after the first trial, and then there was a big court battle to keep that book from being published and put out there. you know, and things like that. So Keith Henderson stood to profit from this whole trial in the first place, and now his credibility is completely shattered if Cam gets off. So I think that's your link you're looking for, but go ahead.
No, no. The profit, and it goes way beyond simple profit. I think that this is a case of the justice system has a bad actor in the personhood of Keith Henderson. We know, and you, Ed, better than any of us on this call right now, you know that there's a bunch of bad actors in the justice system, bunch of bad actors. And Keith Henderson, I think, is one of those bad actors who's determined to do something to David Kam, because David Kam's attorneys were sharp enough to successfully appeal Keith Henderson's bad acting in the first two trials, and now Henderson is I don't think Henderson really cares what Cam gets convicted on, as long as he gets convicted, because Henderson thinks that's going to make him look good, give him justification
for doing
all of that.
I agree. I mean, this is all about Henderson's ego. When I mentioned the book and stuff, you know, credibility is everything, especially when you have an ego a mile high like he does. You know, so for him to go ahead and profit from the book, for him to make sure he saves face, I mean, this is all this is about. I don't think there's anything to do with justice in this case whatsoever. However, There are some things with David Kam that did come out. Hang on, I want to put this out there. Because David Kam left the state police 4 months before the murders. According to investigators and stuff like that, not Henderson, you know, he was acting really strange when he found the murder scene. He didn't try to see if his wife or his daughter was alive. He just immediately grabbed his son out of there and started CPR. You know, and then, of course, Cam had a history of womanizing, if you will. So there was all kinds of stuff brought out about him having an affair and thing like that. You know, there's a lot here. I mean, Cam is not an innocent little angel. The life choices he made could have helped put him in this position. But is he guilty of murder, you know, or is Keith Henderson just being over-aggressive? Go ahead, Ed.
Well, you know, he talked about the affairs. I mean, started to think, okay, well, maybe he had some affairs. That's probably – then apparently he likes adult women. So Keith Henderson, in his allegation of child molestation, doesn't work. But I think it goes even beyond that, because right now you see Floyd County is going into hock over this trial. You know, I think when it gets to Henderson's ego, not only has he had two cases turned over, one that, I mean, any of us could probably look at and go, holy crap, that's going to get turned over. But I think the other part is they're already in hock. If they come to find out that twice the man went to prison and lost 13 years of his life because of prosecutorial misconduct or malfeasance or incompetence, and then he gets acquitted, he is going to line up to rip them to shreds. I mean, he's going to bankrupt that county, because at that point, if he is acquitted, you know, double jeopardy kicks in. Now he can't be tried again. He has free reign. David Kam has free reign to go after them. As far as I understand the law, he's got the potential to go after them. And at that point, Keith Henderson gets deposed.
Next question. Go ahead, Paul.
Public works for me. I mean, there is actually two trials going on right now in Floyd County that are costing Floyd County folks a ton of money. William Clyde Gibson and David Kam thing. But right now, it looks like the David Clyde Gibson thing, they're on pretty solid ground. Prosecutor's office on pretty solid ground. I mean, they got everything.
Oh, yeah.
They got a confession on that one. But this Cam thing, but this Cam thing makes Keith Henderson looks like Don Quixote. You know, he's going to tilt at this particular windmill as many times as it takes to prevail on something. And I'm with Ed. Should Cam be acquitted? He and his attorney should absolutely clean their clocks.
And I'm sure they will.
And the thing is, as far as ego goes, that's where Keith Henderson gets put on a stand and cannot get out of it. He is in the hot seat, and if Cam's attorneys are good enough to burn him three times in court, they're going to eviscerate him if they get him on the stand and make him testify and get depositions from him about, you know, okay, where did this crap come from? Henderson's terrified of that prospect.
Ahead,
I'm going to make a prediction on that point, guys. Let me tell you, Henderson is so deep into this. Should Cam get acquitted and he and his attorney decide to go after Floyd County, it would not surprise me one iota if Henderson didn't commit suicide. Henderson will not want to get on this. He will not want to get on the stand and admit anything. I'm telling you, this guy, the ego and the saving face thing, this is huge. This is huge for Henderson.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time something like that has happened in that situation. You know, the ego sometimes overloads the ass. And I can't say that that's probably not a possibility because his ego is that big.
I wouldn't think he's in that deep. But you know, could be wrong. I just think he really, really does not want to be on the other end of the questions.
Well, I totally agree with you there.
David can't get acquitted, and he will be. I agree with you. I agree. So
he very well could be. He very well could be. But it's interesting to me because there's a lot of things in this case that to me, you know, does not help David Kam at all. But, you know, the question is, as it applies to law is beyond a reasonable doubt. And can there be a reasonable doubt in this case? And I think ultimately, whether Kam committed the murders or not, you know, there is plenty of evidence out there to create reasonable doubt, you know, when you look at how it's been manufactured by Henderson. So on that point, I actually agree with you guys. But it's going to be interesting to see where it goes going forward. On the flip side, though, I've got to put this out there because, you know, we spend a lot of time on this show, you know, talking about bad cops and things like that. Our good friend Dale the Truth, he's got a story at the minute, folks. He's damn good at making sure we get accountability to police officers. Make sure you check out his show Thursday nights at 7 right here. But, you know, we've got a good story coming out. There was an officer that had been called to a store to arrest a woman for shoplifting. Florida, Miami-Dade County, Florida, police officer Vicky Thomas was called to a store because a lady was in there. She just filled up her basket with groceries and just walked out with a basket. The lady's name was Jessica Robles, and the cop decided instead of taking her to jail that she was just going to give her a citation and a notice to appear in court. And then miraculously, above and beyond, she actually took the lady back into the store and gave her $100 to buy groceries. Apparently, this lady, Jessica Robles, was trying to feed her kids. I had no way to feed her kids, was worried about buying food for her kids. She did not have any kind of prior arrest records, nothing, not even a simple traffic ticket. And, you know, she was explaining to the officer about this. So Thomas decided, you know, to use better judgment instead of taking her to jail. But when she went above and beyond, she gave this woman $100 to buy food for her kids. I think that's an incredible, that's one of those good stories that we don't spend much time on. And I just wanted to put that out there because I thought that was an excellent a situation where a cop actually used, you know, really good discretion. Now, I don't know, you know, $100 out of pocket, hey, you know what, that's a lot of money to me. I don't know if it's a lot of money to her, but, you know, I thought that was pretty good that a cop actually did the right thing. And in this case, I think it is right. She was just trying to feed her kids, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. If you want to talk just strictly numbers, somebody will probably do the right thing by the cop and give him some money saying, you know, hey, do that again.
It's actually two women. It wasn't a man. It was a cop was a woman, too.
As a taxpayer, we've got a mother who's simply trying to feed her kids. So, you know, so what are we going to do? We're going to arrest her, incarcerate her, process her. We're probably going to spend $1,500, $2,000 on ripping her to shreds. That's if her kids don't end up in, you know, is some sort of ward of the state. Then it gets into the tens of thousands of dollars. So, I mean, you know, that simple act of kindness also pays huge dividends that now the kids aren't going into foster home. Now the mom's not going to jail. The courts aren't clogged up. Public defenders don't have to do it. Hey, honestly, as far as the taxpayer goes, that $100 probably paid 100 times return on the investment just of what saved us.
Well, you know, just the reputation alone. Yeah, just reputation alone helps. But this, you know, the cop was also a single mother. You know, so she's got three kids, age 12 and under, and things about all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we get into all of this stuff, but that's one of those feel-good stories we never spend any time on. I thought it was great that a cop actually did the right thing. I'm not very pleased with most police these days right here in Louisville, I'll be honest with you. But I think that, you know, when you get a good story like that, it's those kind of stories that I've always seen behind the scenes until my own personal experiences, you know, and I just thought I just wanted to put it out there. We're going to take another break. When we get back, we're going to switch to national and have a good time. So stick around, folks. We'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Oh, being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springer of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Made this song an integral part of the show. Yes, I have. I want to live in that playground of my mind where the Democrats live. Where the Democrats live. I know I do. If you ask anybody major, I tell you, it's so funny. It's utterly ridiculous. Quick announcement. Rand Paul is going to be in Nicholasville tomorrow. For you guys who are screaming, wanting to know what the hell went on with the budget shutdown and everything else, now's your chance. He'll be in Nicholasville tomorrow at Frisch's Big Boy at on 791 North Main Street from noon to 1 o'clock. Okay, and if I know Rand very well, he'll be there later than 1 o'clock. He doesn't seem to get in and out as quickly as he's supposed to sometimes. So, you know, if you guys want to get a chance to talk to him, go ahead. You know, but he was in Marshall County. He's on a Western Kentucky tour right now. And I tell you, it's really interesting because he was in Marshall County. And some of the things he had to say, you know, he put one statement out that said, the good news is your government has opened up again. And the bad news is your government has opened up again. And he's absolutely right. You know, he's absolutely right. We're borrowing $1 million every minute, Ed. And when it comes to President Obama, we are going to borrow just during President Obama's term in office as much as all previous presidents combined. Every president from history until Barack Obama combined will not have borrowed as much money total as Barack Obama has at his short term in office. What do we say about that, Ed?
Well, we say a lot of things. One, and in all fairness, he inherited one hell of an upward trajectory and a train going at downhill at a hell of a speed from George Bush. So I'll give him that much. That's the God's honest truth. That's why I left the Republican
Party.
But
that's a good excuse for 2 years.
So that, you know, so there was some certain momentum there. The other part is like, I guess in simplest terms, it's like, look, if you don't submit a budget, I don't know how much money you can spend if you just spend what you feel like spending without a budget to reel your ass in. So
thank you.
Yeah, we still don't have a budget.
And see, that's it. You know, if you want to use, you know, and that's the thing with the liberals. They don't quite want to take responsibility, you know, like conservatives do. Not that conservatives are much better at it, but let's face the facts here. We continually talked about all the government shutdowns, a total of 18 now, and the Democrats were responsible for almost all of them. You know, but they never talk about why. What happened with that government shutdown has happened all these other times before. The reality is, though, that to blame Bush, you could do that for the first 2 years of Barack Obama's presidency. In my opinion, based on history and based on things that I've looked at, on average, it takes about 2 years for a new president to get anything of his enacted because they do this shit a year or two in advance. So what happens is Barack Obama's off the hook for 2 years. The problem is he's been in office 5 years. So the last 10 years,
they're still the trajectory, you know, there's still a wind down from the wars. So, you know, in all fairness, I'm going to discount it a little bit. But yeah, it's Barack Obama. If somebody were to, it always used to be an old joke that I can't remember where I heard it years ago. But you know, this household went bankrupt, and they sit down with the lawyers and stuff and say, "Well, you're out of money, and you know, didn't you have a household budget? Didn't you have this? You know, how did you go bankrupt?" And they look at the lawyer and say, "Well, we can't be out of money." And he says, "Well, why not?" And he says, "We still have checks." So they don't have a budget. So if you don't have a budget and you just kind of, you know, you go shopping every day and you're handing out money every day, you know, at the end of the month, the end of the year, you're going to look at it and go, holy hell, how did we spend all that money? We don't have. We need to borrow some. What the hell happened?
And Rand Paul continues to point that out.
We got a bunch of hacks up there.
And you know, Rand Paul continues to point that out. I mean, you know, he continues, you know, and part of his message that he's out telling everybody, you know, and it is very true. There is no debate over spending. So we continue to spend at the same rate. But if we don't spend at the same rate, then the government shuts down. So all of these deadlines are forced on Congress to pass something, but what they're passing has no new restraints on it. And he's absolutely right. Because of all these deadlines, you have to raise the debt ceiling to meet the spending deadline. So once you raise the debt ceiling with no restraints, then you've got all this massive debt that accumulates. And you pointed out the obvious at the very beginning, a second ago when I brought it up. Where's the budget? There has not been a budget passed since Barack Obama went into office. Not one. He has not put in a budget. The Senate Democrats have not put in a budget. They have not done one damn thing to work with the House on a budget, a realistic budget, at all. So been running with no budget. It's just like you and me going out, like you said. You're out of money, but you have checks, so you go borrow more money to justify having the checks. I mean, that's essentially what we're doing. It's a runaway train. So why is it that the American people are naive enough to continue blaming the Republicans? And here's something I want to point out, too. Because, you know, last week when all this stuff went down and they finally decided they were going to cave like we knew they would, one of the things that stood out in my mind was that the Republicans were going to suffer. But that was before we started seeing all the problems with the Obamacare rollout. This thing cannot be classified as anything but a failure. There are zero successes whatsoever. So with that in mind, you've had 4 years to plan.
You know, and here's where I'm going to take a moment, and you know damn good and well, everybody that knows me knows it, that there was a guy who was saying, roll it out. Roll it all out. Let's do it. Let's see. You know, so how many years, I think the funny part is, we think of how many years the Republicans, what, 40 votes, 40-plus votes, defund Obamacare, defund Obamacare, you know, with nothing to replace it with, nothing better, really. But lo and behold, the best thing they could have done was listen to me and just say, you know what? Roll it out.
But I always listen to you when you have something meaningful to say. You know, but here's the thing, too, though. Let's look at this realistically. It's been a dismal failure. We've spent over $600 million for a project that was supposed to be less than $100 million. Any five-year-old could have probably written the program that was needed to do this. We hired a no-bid company called CGI out of Canada, who had been fired from Canada for putting together a faulty program and not delivering. So everything about this screamed failure, and the Republicans never, ever, ever used that in their arguments or anything else. So here's the thing. We now know that it's a failure. We knew it was going to be. But now we can prove at least the rollout was a failure. We know that there's only roughly 51,000 people who are actually enrolled in Obamacare, actually fully enrolled in Obamacare, regardless of what the administration is putting out. We know we need 7 million to make this thing anywhere near what they would consider sustainable, and we know that's not going to happen. Now, I don't think that me and you are the two smartest guys in the world. I know that you're a Mensa member, and I'll give you more credit than myself. I don't think that we're the only two smart guys
in America. I strongly suspect I barely got in.
I don't care. You're in. But the reality is this. The point I'm making is this, though. If two nobodies like me and you, all right, we're down to our blue-collar guys. We know what it's all about. If two nobodies like me and you predict these failures and see these things happening, then logically you would assume that somebody with the education of Barack Obama and the people around him surely would have known the same thing. If they knew that, then this becomes an intentional sabotage. So is the end game this? And this is where I'm going with this. Many people believe that Obamacare was set up to fail, even by Obama himself, because the real agenda for Obama and the liberal Democrats is single-payer health care. What's your thought on that?
No. Now, because of the way it failed, or is currently failing and foundering, it's incompetence. It's government and bureaucratic incompetence. If something else had happened, I can't imagine what scenario, then the American public might have a little faith and say, okay, you know what, this was a half-assed effort. Maybe it doesn't need to go 100%, but no, I mean, yeah. So you've got, you know, this thing, you know, this is okay. Like going in for a hangnail and having the doctor cut the tip of your finger off and then having him look at you on up. Practice round.
Go ahead, Paul.
Let's do open heart surgery now. It's like no.
I know you're itching, Paul.
I think when you speak in terms of the education, I look at the education a lot of these guys got. There are some doctors up there. There are some business people up there. Barack Obama is neither. So as far as implementing a massive insurance program, which is essentially, it is a form of business, he has no implementation skills. It's just, look at John.
Well, we know Obama. We know Obama doesn't have any education. He's never been anything more than a bookworm, and the only thing he ever studied was communism. Go ahead, Paul.
Ed's being way more charitable than what Obama deserves. Incompetence, I think incompetence has been demonstrated, but incompetence born by what? These are some of the smartest people. They've got an unlimited amount of money. They've got access to all these brilliant people in the United States, and yet this is the best they can do? No, it's not simple incompetence. I think it is engineered incompetence. To what end? I will let you speculate till your heart's content, Ed.
And I agree with you. You know, just because someone, you know, some of the smartest people I know in this world, and it might be saying a whole hell of a lot to people that don't know me, but some of the smartest people I know in this whole world, you would think when you talk to them or paid attention, they were as dumb as rocks. But they're really not. They want people intentionally to believe that about them, that it's easier for them to manipulate and get what they want. You know, they do it all the time, and it's amazing to me because, there's a couple of guys, and I'm not going to mention no names, that I thought were about as incompetent as it gets. And only after the end game result had been achieved did I realize how intelligent they really were because they were working towards a goal. And that's why I'm curious about this. The single-payer health care plan, a lot of people think that Obamacare is engineered incompetence, as Paul's words, and I like those words, you know, because they want this to fail. Remember, the Clintons, even Bill Clinton, with all his popularity, couldn't get health care. So they take a guy like Obama, they ramrod it through, and everything else, it fails, and now we've got a case for single-payer health care, which is what the liberals always wanted anyway. I'm not sure that this is not engineered incompetence. Go ahead, Martin.
I just tend to think it is. It's just the nature of the snafus. I mean, there is no scapegoat. If there were a scapegoat, if there were something that they could have done, you know, and the Republicans threw up some sort of roadblock at it, and they could blame it on somebody and say, see, you know what, those assholes, they gummed up here. Apparently they don't want a hybrid system. We're just going to have to go full bore with it. But no, it's just, this is basically the people who are implementing it can't. And it's there for everybody
here you
to
have,
see.
But here you have $600 million, roughly, spent on a project supposed to be less than $100 million. Now, the way I look at that, $500 million, the CGI to make sure that they could put back into, you know, Democrat politicians for election, minus whatever their cut is. You see what I'm saying? This is how it's done. We're not used to seeing it done on that large of a number, but it's done like that every day.
Well, they're Canadians. They're Canadians. Technically, they can't give the money back. They
sure
can't
they
make
can.
Contributions.
Sure
well,
they
sure
can. They can make contributions to the super PACs all day long. They can make contributions to super PACs all day long. You know, they're still limited by the personal donations, but they can still make the contributions to the super PACs and everything else. So they're going to do that. That's already done. That's a done deal. But that, I think, is how they do it. So now you get to maintain power because you're using our tax money to buy the daggone donations, if you will. Donations, my ass, but donations, if you will, to make sure you stay in there. And I think when you get into the engineered incompetence that Paul used, I think that there's a lot of proof of that. Look at the way that the news has manipulated everything. I personally believe, and I said this last night, I personally believe that Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi sat down with Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, and they put together a plan to shut down the government to try to neutralize and get rid of the Tea Party contingent and influence. Because the Tea Party, from the very beginning of this, has gotten all the blame for the government shutdown, which totally defies logic. You've got 435 congressmen, and they're trying to blame less than 10 people for shutting down the entire government, which is laughable at best. But all you heard was terrorist, anarchist, all of these different things. At MSNBC last week on the Rachel Maddow show, they selectively edited a video and then told the whole world that there was a confrontation between the demonstrator and the police. But everybody thought this demonstrator that was in Washington last week on the mall had started this confrontation with the police. And all of a sudden you get the whole video and it's the real facts. The police officer started confronting the demonstrator and escalated it. So, you know, you've got mainstream media being totally complicit here. We've got a CNN Emmy Award-winning journalist and reporter, Amber Lyon. She's told the whole world that CNN is paid by the Obama administration and foreign governments so that they don't put out any damning stories. And they send them the narrative that they want them to put out on the news. So they're bought off. Now, this is an Emmy Award-winning journalist. There's nothing to gain here by destroying your reputation and credibility by making those charges. So, see, that's what I think. I think this has been an implemented design, and it was all designed to take out the Tea Party. The problem was
I do think they wanted the elites wanted their power back. And I think they're going to be able to get it back if they can. As far as the engineered failure, which we actually use that term in the timing industry sometimes, in the accounting, in the business, if I'm going to sit here and connect the dots and say, you know, I always got to say, to what end? To what end would they do that? And I would say, if nothing else, maybe they're going to roll it out. It's federal. You know, the feds are going to subsidize the states that are putting up these trusts or whatever for a couple years. I think at the end of that, it may still be a dismal failure. It might work. I'm going to give them that much. You know, who knows? Sometimes you can flip a coin and get heads 10 times in a row. Things happen. But I think if it doesn't work, which I think is a higher probability, I think what will happen in the end is they'll say, okay, you know what? We tried. You know, you can have your private sector insurance back. You know, well, see if we can make it a little smoother. But it would be inhumane to take all the, you know, that Medicare or whatever, that government subsidized health care away from people who can't afford it. So we'll just leave it there.
Well,
and then you got votes.
You see, I can't leave it there, though. That's the problem. And I think if we do our job...
I'm saying the government's going to say we'll leave it
there. I know that.
You know, this doesn't affect you working people who can afford your insurance, but it would just be inhumane to give them insurance for 2 years and then take it away. So,
but they're going to have to. But they're going to have to. Yeah, sure they are. Because at the end of the grace period, and the states have to pick up the cost, the states can't pick up the cost. There is no money there. The federal government is not going to keep giving that money to the states because the federal government doesn't have it either. So the states are going to be left to fend for themselves like we always are. And you know, just to give you a good example, no child left behind.
Has that ever stopped the federal government before?
It stops them all the time. Let's look at Child Left Behind and all kinds of other government programs where they said we're going to implement this. The states have got to pay for it, and tough luck. They don't care. That's the federal government, okay? But the reality is, though, when you look at all of this stuff, and then you start looking at the NSA, the TSA, wiretaps, illegal surveillance, all the other crap that's going on out there, it's easy to see the orchestrated plan. We keep being deceived and being brought back and forth so that we can't focus on any one thing. But when you put everything together, oh, there's a plan in place. And Obamacare is designed to fail for a reason. And I firmly believe that. But you know what? We have much more time to talk about it. We're out of time. Thanks for the call, Paul. Final thoughts, Ed.
Final thoughts. You know, it's, how much stuff did we hit on today? I just think, you know, we just need to try to look further down the road. We need to look, and as I was saying, and it's one of the hobbies, one of the habits that I get into, is always ask, you know, to what end? To what end are they doing this? To why would somebody want to do, you know, X, Y, or Z? And like I say, I look at the failures thus far of Obamacare, and, you know, and I look at it, I try to look at it from a positive view sometimes, too, and says, okay, well, what if it was single payer? You know, what benefits could we reap from it? And the things that I see, I don't even see the government, you know, these politicians, they don't even see what I see. You know, and there are some reforms. I'll just keep them to myself for right now, but I mean, I can see some advantages to doing things right, but they don't see it. So I really do think it's just, I think it's just incompetence. I don't think they're, you know, I hate to say it about my government, but I really don't think they're all that sharp. And I really don't think that the good business people and the doctors and the good ones that are up there, I don't think they have their fingerprints on this. I think you've got people like Yarmouth, who's rich kid, Ivy League educated. I guess it's in journalism or something like that. You know, not exactly who you want making your medical decisions. Barack Obama, a supposed constitutional lawyer and you know, activist or whatever, or community organizer, again, stepping up, and I just don't think they have the skills, and I think this whole Obamacare thing is just a bunch of the people who put it together didn't know how to implement it. They didn't know who to bring in to get it implemented, right? So I think in a couple of years, if it doesn't work out, they're going to scramble it, and they're going to just try to salvage a couple parts of it that will ensure them a block of voters for all eternity.
Well, and unfortunately, that's exactly what they're doing now, in my opinion, is determining who the block of voters is going to be, and they're buying the vote. They do that by hiring places like CGI, paying them 6 times the amount of money that they should have been paid to do this job, and then turning out to be incompetent on top of that. There's a reason this was a no-bid contract. When we talk about, you know, engineered incompetence, as our good friend Paul Holliger stated, you know, I like that term a lot, and I'll tell you why. Because you see engineered incompetence everywhere you go. Anybody that has ever worked on a factory line has seen engineered incompetence. One of the Ford Motor Company, I saw engineered incompetence. A guy knows how to put a screw on a bumper and hold a bumper on a car, but he's too incompetent to do that, so the line keeps going off. Or because he's pissed off about something and wants a change at Ford, the union will sit back and say, well, you know, sometimes things don't always operate right, and plant a seed and tell him how to handle things, and he'll go in there and keep shooting his screw sideways. That's engineered incompetence. It's designed to fail a particular system so that you can work and get what you want. And that, I think, is the whole game plan with Obamacare. I think it's the whole game plan with the United States right now, to be quite honest about it. There is no way in hell that you can tell me that one leader, one president, who answers to 435 congresspeople and 100 U.S. senators, has so much power that he can be as incompetent as he is. NSA, TSA, Fast and Furious, IRS. You throw all of those things together, and now this Obamacare glitch. It's not a glitch. It's an ass. You cannot be that incompetent and not be held accountable. There's a reason he's not held accountable, because this is an intentional act. I've seen it happen on the assembly line. I've seen it happen in real life everywhere. So my question to the American people is this. Are you going to accept engineered incompetence designed to make our system of government fail at all levels? Not just Obamacare. Take that personal crap out of it. Look at the big picture. Look at everything in this country that has failed. A constitutional lawyer is destroying the Constitution. All this incompetence is not incompetence at all. All this incompetence is planned mass destruction. You've got to understand that. And when you do, maybe get off of your butt and get involved in the process and get other people elected to office and take this country back and make us proud once again to be America across the world. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will join me as usual on Wednesday night at 7. And don't forget Thursday night, TNT show right here at 7 o'clock and a good friend Kim Moman Sunday night at 7 as well with Rudy Unbridled. Until next week, Mr. Martin, take care.
All right. You have a good one, sir.
All right, sir. Folks, have a great night. We will see you tomorrow. Take care.